Hi, and welcome to the QuitCast for Writers. This is the show that helps you know what to quit, what to keep, and what to question. My name is Becca Syme, and I am a success coach for authors with thousands of hours in coaching some of the most successful people in this industry. My goal in this podcast is to help you understand why you're not having success if you aren't, and how to double down on the success you're already having. Anyone can tell you what worked for them, and they can say it might not work for you, but they can't tell you why. I can tell you why. Welcome to the QuitCast. We are deep into our discussion of writer's block, and today is the second part of question the premise, there's no such thing as writer's block. Specifically, we're going to get into the second source of what we know to be writer's block and get a little bit deeper into that QTP of whether or not exists for those of you who need more discussion on that. But specifically, we're going to talk about the second source because we're getting a little bit more into the personality stuff today. I have a little bit of information in this show notes about the Clifton Strengths Assessment because we're going to be using some of that language to discuss this process today. And if you're not familiar with the success metric system called the Clifton Strengths Assessment, you can read about that more below. But because so much of what happens in our writing comes from the thing between our ears, right, our brain, we're going to talk more about how our brains are wired and why it's important to understand that. So without further ado, the second source of writer's block that we're going to talk about today is being fallow, F-A-L-L-O-W, fallow. Now, for those of you who have heard this phrase, there's no such thing as writer's block before, one of the really common secondary phrases that comes up when people discuss this is there's no such thing as cellist's block, or there's no such thing as plumber's block. Or they'll say cellists don't get cellist block and plumbers don't get plumber's block. And in order to talk about this concept of being fallow, we have to discuss the difference between cellists, plumbers versus writers. And in order to do that, we're going to talk about the actual process of what it is that we do as writers, the process of creativity. Now, I want to be really careful to say it's not that cellists or plumbers or scientists or whatever can't be creative. Yes, everyone can be creative. The point is not to say that writers have some kind of a corner on creativity. The point is to say that the entire process of what we do as writers is to literally create something from nothing. So when you compare what a writer does to what a plumber does or what a cellist does or what a doctor does, right, you're comparing two very different processes. Executing a process that already exists is very different from creating something out of nothing. So I feel like what we do when we say things like doctors don't get doctor's block is we're somehow assuming that there is no inherent core creative process to the act of writing a book specifically. And that's just not true. So what we're doing when we compare those two types of jobs to each other, again, for the purpose of this discussion, I am not assuming that there is no creativity in those jobs, but that the core of those jobs is executing a process that already exists, and the core of writing is creating something from nothing, right? And again, there's nuance to that, which we'll talk about in just a second, but I want to define our terms first, because we're basically comparing apples to crowbars. Like, it's just, they're not even made of the same material, the two processes. And the important part about why acknowledging writer's block is so important is that if you don't acknowledge it, then you are not going to take full advantage of what this process is, what the core of this process is, the creating something from nothing, which is writing. Creating something from nothing. You are making up the world and the plot and the characters in your head. They did not exist somewhere else before. You're making them up. you're creating something from nothing. So that's more akin to, and this is where our metaphors need to come into place, it is more akin to growing something out of the ground or to having a baby than it is to executing a process that already exists, performing someone else's music. No matter how creative you are with the performance, you are not composing the music if you're a performer, right? If you were a composer, then I would put you in the Apple's arena instead of the crowbars. And I know that's a rough metaphor. And again, I know I keep caveating this, but I know I'm going to get some frustrated people saying, but I'm perfectly creative as a doctor or a scientist or a dancer or a cellist or whatever. The point, again, isn't that you can't have any creativity. It's to say the core process is different. So let's break this metaphor down a little bit and talk about the reason I think this is so important. When you create something out of nothing, you use a lot of resources inside of your brain to make that happen. So it's very similar to planting wheat in the ground, or, and this is why I also was using the making a baby metaphor, right? Because you're making something, a spark out of nothing, right? Not nothing, I get it. I know basic biology, but the creation of something that didn't exist before. The creation of a plant that didn't exist before, of a book that didn't exist before. This is really an important thing to understand, because when you're creating that new thing, you're using a lot of resources to make that happen. This is why we have the concept in farming of fallow fields. And this is, again, this is why this is the source often of writer's block. So my dad is a farmer. He farms wheat, durum, chickpeas, lentils, legumes. He is a out of the ground. That's all he does with his life is to farm. And he does it very well, and he does a lot of it. And so I have heard a lot about farming over my lifetime, having grown up on a farm. But what was so fascinating to me as a kid was to watch this process of leaving fields fallow, because it made more sense to me that you would plant something every single year in a field, right? Because you have the availability, you have the seed. Why not plant something every year? And I'll never forget the first time I had a conversation with my dad about fallow fields. It made such a huge impression on me because he really broke down the science of what happens when you have a growing plant in the soil and what that does to the soil, how it takes the nutrients out of the soil, how it causes all of these other chemical reactions to happen that make the soil change, right? Like the actual place that this new plant comes out of changes as a result of having created this new thing. And so the reason that they leave fields fallow is to allow the soil to regain the nutrients that it lost when it made this plant. And so they leave the field fallow every once in a while, depending on what your crop rotation strategy is. You may leave them fallow more often or less often, depending on how you personally think you should do or what government program you're part of, right? So there's this concept of allowing the soil to rest, because what it's doing is such a hard job, right? This is why I compared it to birth also, because there's a certain period of time after you give birth when you don't conceive, because your body isn't ready to conceive again, right? And so the process of creating something out of nothing makes this fallow time necessary. And this is why it's so important to break these differences down to their absolute core processes. Because if what I'm primarily doing, and we talked about this a little bit in the burnout series, right? About how creative energy takes more out of you in order to need more put back in. That's really this same concept. So the reason that some people suffer from writer's block is that their mind needs to be fallow for certain periods of time. Wherever they've gotten to in their book, they have to stop because they need to sort of realign themselves or to rest or to regain whatever processes or energy is gone inside their brain from having to expend it creating all of this new stuff, right? And everybody's a little bit different in how much this particular creative process impacts them. Everybody takes on energy and expends energy a little bit differently. Everybody needs different things because their bodies are different, their lives are different, their ages are different, and their brains are different, right? So everyone has a little bit of a different need. But for some of us, the reason we run into writer's block is because our minds have this need to be fallow and to reorient themselves in terms of being able to produce more creativity again. And so if that is the case with you and your brain has this need to be fallow every once in a while for different reasons, and we'll talk about those in a second, then pushing your way through writer's block is not actually going to help you get any faster in your writing because the block itself is not laziness. Your brain is doing something with that time. And again, part of the reason I get so excited or passionate about this topic is that when I hear people talk about this, about pushing your way through writer's block or there's no such thing as writer's block, they make these comparisons like with cellists and plumbers versus writers. And I want to say, if you're not comparing the same thing, if the system that you're using to produce the end result is not the same system, then you can't compare the processes. You just can't. So for some people, it's a little bit easier, right? Like you might have if we're using this agricultural metaphor, if you have a particular type of book that when you write it, it takes very little creativity from you because there's already some form of structure in your head that you're just reproducing. Or if you happen to be one of the people who can outline your books, and again, if you haven't watched my videos on this, not everyone can outline their books before they write them. So if you haven't seen that, go watch it. But if you tend to be one of those people who can outline, and that outline is short-circuiting some of the need for fallowness, then you might be able to write faster than other people can write who need this fallowness at their head in order to be able to produce more creative process, right? So if you are in a period, and they might be short or they might be large, if you're in a period of fallowness, the best thing you can do is recharge your proverbial nutrients, is to get more energy pennies or whatever it is that you're using as a metaphor to talk about your energy, or to get it from different sources, right? Because for some of us, depending on what strengths we have, if you have high input, you might have a need to be fallow so that you can go and research something or find these new details that you're going to use in your narrative, or to learn something about the character, right? Like you might need the stop to research because you've used all your input nutrients with this part of the book that you've already written and you need to go find some more, right? So if you have a need to be fallow because you have high intellection and you need to spend time thinking and you have to really process what's going to happen before you can write it, or if you have a need to be fallow because you can't write forward if what's behind you is not completely correct, right? There's all these different reasons why you might need to stop and not be able to progress. And very few of them have a core source of your laziness or your incapacity, right? The reason that I get so passionate about this is because I see this advice being given so consistently, and then what the person actually needs from the process they're not getting because they feel this pressure to push through the writer's block. Like somehow writer's block is the worst possible thing that could happen to you. What happens if writer's block is the best thing that could happen to you? If forcing you to have some fallowness in your process is part of what makes your books better, then that's a good thing. You want to embrace that and not push it away. It's very similar to me in the, if you want to raise crops more quickly and more efficiently, what you don't do is completely deplete the nutrients over and over and never allow them to reform. You are a responsible person with the resource that you have, and you leave it fallow so it can produce better for you. And so many of us need to learn how to accept and love the fact that we need fallow times in our writing. And now I want to take just a pause for a second to talk about the pain that may be associated with identifying that you have this need for more fallow time, right? Because if you do, and you want to write fast, but you have this need to be fallow, pushing yourself to not need that is not actually going to make you faster. Most of the time, all it's going to do is make you burn out. And at least it's going to make you slower, if nothing else. The problem is, if you don't know what you're working with, and you don't know what your assets are, and you don't know how to take the best care of the field that you have, you are not going to be able to grow well and over again. That uber creative, from nothing spark creative process writing, right? It's going to eventually run out. You're going to run out of your capacity. And I don't say this to try to depress anybody or scare anybody. I say it because if there's a way for us to hold that off at the pass and keep it from coming to pass, then I would like to see us do that. And there are a lot of us who have a much bigger need to be fallow so that we can produce what we need energetically to make the books happen or make them better or make them faster, whatever it is that will happen because of our fallowness. But we so often try to treat our brain like it's a factory, like it's an assembly line, instead of like it's a field. So we need to stop comparing apples to crowbars when we're talking about our creative processes. So we need to start comparing apples to apples. So this is why I'm such a huge fan of everyone knowing what their strengths are, and why I'm probably more passionate about this than I am about anything else, when it comes to you understanding what's reasonable to expect from yourself. Because when we are making comparisons that are not real, this is really important to internalize. When someone tells you that cellists don't get cellist block and plumbers don't get plumber's block, the reason that we assimilate that is because we think, oh my gosh, you're right. Yeah, cellists don't get cellist block. That's so true. So therefore, I shouldn't have writer's block. That is a logical fallacy. Writers get writer's block, and there's a reason why they get it. There are multiple reasons. We talked about fear last week. We talked about the need to be fallow this week. We're going to talk about more in the coming weeks. But just because it makes logical, apparent sense does not mean that it's true. You need to question the premise every time you hear logic from an expert in this industry. And again, I know I've said this before, I don't care if it's me, I don't care if it's anybody. Because honestly, some of you listening to this, you are much more in the processes that can be assimilated style. You are more over here and less over here when it comes to creating something from nothing. You might be using a template to outline. You might be using beats. You might be using whatever it is. There is much less something from nothing happening in your brain. And so it feels like, well, why can't all of you just be this way? Why can't all of you just not have writer's block, right? But the problem is that not all of us are wired the same way. And some of us do need to have writer's block. For some of us, writer's block is actually a fairly good thing. And so I know, again, I know I'm getting a little bit heightened in my intensity around this subject, but it's just something that I see derailing people so much. And so again, there are strength reasons why you might have a need to be fallow if you fall into this area of having a lot of energy that needs to be expended when you are creating something from nothing. And so if that's you, please feel like you have the permission to do that fallowness. And this is going to be a little bit of tough love here for just a second. But if you are not allowing yourself to hear the truth that it might be good for you to either get a part-time job or go back and get a full-time job again, because your writing process looks more like this than it does like this, and you can't make as much money as you need to make, and you've been holding out making that decision, I just want you to know that you're going to be okay if that happens. And I know this is not a popular thing to talk about, and I'm probably going to get roasted for this. And those of you who are going to do it are probably okay doing it. I'm fine with it, because I know that those of you who need to hear this really need to hear it. Some of us need to be okay letting ourselves be a part-time or a hobby writer, because we are not built for the kind of speed and the kind of marketing and drive that it takes to do this full time. I'm not speaking to everyone. I'm just saying there are some of us who need to hear that it's okay to be that way, and it's okay to need to take more time to write your books. And if you are not the kind of person who can make a lot of money releasing few books a year, because those people do exist, and again, not everybody's the same, so don't assume that your success metric is the only one that's viable. There are plenty of people who are making money who are not releasing 1,000 books a year. It's happening. It's just not, they're not comfortable talking about it, because there's so much push for speed in this industry right now. And that's understandable. So I want to say that's understandable. But if you are one of those people who needs to hear that it's going to be okay, and that you will always come back to writing, and that indie publishing is always going to be here, and that it's okay for you to go back and get a part-time job or a full-time job, and it is not failure, it is not defeat, you are not a bad person, you are not a bad writer, just because you can't manage to do whatever it is that somebody else thinks that you should be able to manage to do. There's nothing wrong with that. But I didn't do this video in order to say that. I did this video in order to say, I still think that it's possible. And I think this because I have so many clients who do it. I still think that it's possible. I know it's possible, but I think it's possible for more than just the people it's happening for, to be able to make money writing books at exactly the speed and exactly the style that you are going to write them in. And so if that means you have to have a part-time job for a little while longer, or a full-time job for a little while longer, or if it means that you can't get that house you wanted to get for a little while longer, it's okay. It's going to be okay. I promise you that it will be better if you let things happen the way that they're supposed to happen for you. And I mean supposed to, in terms of where you are, what you can expect from yourself, how much energy you have, how much work you can manage to do, how much time you can manage to carve out for yourself. Not everybody has the same expectations in those arenas. And I just want to say again, I know some of you are going to be frustrated to hear me say this, and that's okay. I think you should be. I think it takes all kinds of people in this industry, and we need people who will be frustrated listening to what I say as much as we need people who are frustrated listening to what you say. And we need everyone, right? Because there's such a huge diversity internally of people in this industry, and externally, but especially internally in this industry, that we need to hear all messages right now. Whew, that was a lot. That was a lot for me. I don't usually get that preachy, and I apologize, but I felt like when we were talking about the fallowness of writer's block, that we really do need to have an honest conversation about the fact that if you are not the kind of person who is wired to be a super fast, repetitive process writer, who is not either able to join with another writer who can make you write faster, or who is not able to get as fast as you want to get, that there still is hope for you to be able to be a writer, that you can still be a writer. And I just want that message to get out there. Anyway, We're supposed to be talking about writer's block, and now I'm all over the place. So I'm going to stop now. We've talked about the fallowness this week, which was my big goal. And next week, we're going to move on to another factor that might be creating writer's block for you. But I felt like it was important for us to continue to hit home that this whole there's no such thing as writer's block thing is not applicable to everyone. And for an awful lot of us, we will have writer's block on a fairly regular basis. You may not like calling it writer's block. That's fine with me. I don't care what you call it. Just knowing that stopping in a manuscript or not being able to progress or not being able to write is not evidence of you being whiny. It's not evidence of you being emotional. It's not evidence of you being lazy or stupid or not a real writer. None of those things are true. Writer's block actually does happen. It's a real thing. It happens to plenty of super successful people. It happens to all people at some point, because all of our brains are going to get older at some point. So it will happen to all of us. And when it does happen, I want us to know that it's okay and that there are ways to combat it and that we can recover. So let's talk about the strategic steps forward if you are one of the fallow writer's block style people. If this is you, there's a good chance that you're going to have an intuitive sense for how to fix the problem and that you have been guilted or shamed into not doing that stuff because someone told you it's not productive. So someone told you either, hey, you can't ever walk away from the manuscript, butt in chair, hand on keyboard, right? Like that's a big mantra in the writers community and it helps a lot of people, but it doesn't help everybody. So if you are one of those people who feels like my mind needs to be fallow for a minute, I need to get up and walk away, and then you can come back and write with a clear mind, then you need to do that. If you are one of the fallow people who needs to input or research or learn or analyze in order to get farther, then you need to do that. If you are a person who needs to go somewhere to help you get ideas, and that's your fallowness, is you're inputting these ideas in or you're getting brainstorming help or whatever, then you need to do that. If you're the kind of person whose fallowness looks like resting or watching other things or reading other things or walking away completely, then you need to do that. The responsible part of us wants to be able to know that I'm being fallow for a reason, right? Like there's a difference between the laziness sort of thing that people are afraid of and fallowness. When you're fallow, you're allowing your subconscious brain to get the processing done that you need to be able to move forward. So the question is always, again, unless it's a fear-based thing, which is a different episode, but if it's a fallowness thing, then what we're looking for is, do I either know what's going to happen next? Have I thought this through enough so I feel prepared to move forward? Have I found this piece of information that I need? Have I found the place in my plot that isn't working? Have I found this thing about my character that I don't know yet that's going to totally change the story and give me that spark or forward motion back, right? Those are the things that will happen when you have that fallowness that's necessary. And so it comes from a lot of different places, that need to sort of pause or hold or recharge, whatever it is. But that is a very important source. And so we talked about fear first. We talked about fallowness today. If you're a person who needs that, then you need to take the time to allow your brain to recover from where it was and where it needs to go, so you can see the story again, right? So we're going to talk a little bit more about a couple of those specific styles of fallowness in future episodes, because we're going to get into some of the other places that writer's block might be coming from. And one of them is about how you create story. And so tune in for future episodes. I hope that this was helpful. I apologize for anybody who felt offended by me telling people to go back and get a job or anything. I, even though I did write a book about quitting, I don't actually want people to quit. I would prefer that they can quit their unrealistic expectations so that they can continue writing as long as they're capable of writing. And not all of us are going to be able to be full-time professional authors. And not all of us should, frankly. And this is another piece about the fallowness. Having a job can sometimes really help you in a lot of ways to avoid the procrastination part of being a writer, because it gives your brain something else to do consciously while you are subconsciously doing some fallow work on your story. The number of writers that I know who have part-time jobs or full-time jobs who are very happy with them because it allows them the space from their manuscript to be able to think and process and work, and it allows them the lack of pressure also, right? Which is something we're going to talk about later. But it's definitely important to think about, could that be serving a purpose for you? You know, if you're highly adaptable, you may need something to adapt to, and having all of your time available might be part of the problem, right? If you need a lot of thinking time, then having this pressure to constantly produce when you really need to go and think about something might be part of the problem. So this is part of why I bring those things up in these videos. And again, I apologize to anybody who I offended. I hope that we're all okay. I hope that you continue watching, because of course, next week we're going to talk about more sources of writer's block. And so I hope that this was helpful. If you have questions, please do put them in the comments. I will do my best to answer them. We always continue these conversations on my Patreon channel. And there's also opportunities to do live coaching groups if you have any interest in that. If you feel like you really need to understand this on a deeper level, that's often a good place to come, even if it's just for 1 month, to try to ask some good questions about how we are doing. Again, I want to thank you all so much for being here, and I am hoping that this series is helpful for you. If you have questions, please do ask them, and I look forward to seeing you on the next QuickCast. Bye.